sorry.
We're not robots.
For CJLO News, I'm Serena Abuljood. On Thursday, February 29, the Israeli military killed around 117 Palestinians and wounded 750 more as they gathered around aid trucks carrying boxes of flour. Israeli tanks and infantry opened fire every time people attempted to pull the contents from the trucks. A reporter from the scene also disclosed that the Israeli tanks rolled over many of the dead and injured bodies. This took place in northern Gaza, where aid deliveries have been lacking for months. According to Al Jazeera's reporting, people felt that it was clearly a trap. Israel's retelling of this massacre changed over the course of the day. At first, they claimed that the trucks were arranged by private contractors who were part of an aid operation that they supervised for the past 4 nights. Then, the Israeli military tried to pin the blame on Palestinians by saying that people were injured as a result of being crushed in a stampede when the trucks arrived. They also justified the shooting by stating that the troops felt threatened, but did not elaborate much on how the crowd posed a threat. Since October 7th, aid agencies report that Israel has been blocking and delaying aid deliveries, yet Israel continues to deny these allegations. And as of today, more than 30,000 Palestinians have been killed, most of whom are women and children. Black History Month wrapped up last week with a celebration of Haitian culture in Montreal. Katie Brady has more.
A group of women gathered in Côte de Neige Tuesday night to celebrate Black History Month with a Haitian dance lesson. Hosted by Femme du Monde, attendees learned about the history and various styles of dance in Haiti and enjoyed a mini-documentary by Haitian Montrealer Nitze Matelier called Kaschen. Dance instructor Tika from Bouche Cow led the group through the Congo dance, one of several styles of dance in Haiti.
Workshops for me bring people together. It's exactly what Haitian dance do, brings people together, a lot of joys. I don't know if you realize, like, from the beginning to the end, everybody was laughing, the movement, everybody was working together, and it was a teamwork too. I just love the ambiance, the fact that everybody is full of joy, you know? It's a moment that you forget everything you have, like every problems you have outside. It's just about joy, dance, drums, learning.
Haitian dance, song, and drumming encompasses a wide variety of styles. They not only celebrate Haiti's rich cultural heritage, but also serve as a form of resistance and storytelling, encapsulating the resilience and joy of the Haitian people who practiced song and dance during colonial slavery. Attendees remarked on how much they learned about the powerful practice and about its current significance to Haitian Montrealers.
What's really stood out for me was how the dance is really close to nature in ways like how they're bare feet and they like to dance on the earth. And it seems just very natural way of dancing and the beat of the drums.
Mais sinon, par rapport à l'événement d'aujourd'hui, le côté un peu plus historique que ma collègue a amené de la danse, je trouvais que ça a donné vraiment, ça a rajouté vraiment une dimension de comme comprendre un peu qu'est-ce qu'on est en train de faire puis la culture derrière ça aussi.
Krishna Pierre from Femme du Monde told CJLO about other events they've held for Black History Month this year.
Alors, en fait, ce qu'on a fait comme activité, on a fait un atelier pour raconter en fait l'histoire des Noirs ici au Québec et au Canada. Donc c'était un atelier qui a été fait dans notre espace même, à nos locaux. Puis par la suite, samedi dernier, le 24 février, on a fait un salon d'un jour. Donc on a invité les femmes noires, en fait, nos membres femmes noires, à venir se faire coiffer gratuitement par des coiffeuses. Donc, elles se sont fait coiffer. Donc c'était une journée spa, détente, coiffure. Donc pour les femmes noires.
Malaika from Femme du Monde, a dancer herself, explained how powerful dance can be to bring people together.
Donc normalement c'est moi qui donne des cours de danse et relaxation à peu près une ou deux fois par mois. Puis j'ai trouvé ça vraiment le fun de voir une autre façon aussi d'enseigner des cours pour les femmes. C'est toujours dans le plaisir, puis je vois toujours comment les femmes adorent participer, puis ça, c'est juste comme très libérateur. Mais c'est ça, moi aussi, j'ai trouvé ça vraiment essentiel de donner aussi le contexte historique de d'où ça vient, les danses traditionnelles haïtiennes.
If you want to learn more about Haitian dancing or cultural events in Côte de Neige, check out Tika's Instagram page at bougekow, B-O-O-G-K-O-W, or visit Femme du Monde on Facebook or on the web.
Hi, you're listening to CJLO. This is Dreamscapes. Tonight we are talking about James Hillman again, and we're here with Cam and Jade. Want to say hi?
Thanks for having me back.
Yeah.
Hello.
Hi. Yeah, so we're talking about James Hillman. We have reached chapter 4 in this book, and we all have some thoughts and feelings about chapter 4.
Yeah.
The title of chapter 4 is Barriers, and yes.
What is a barrier was a question that we raised.
Yes.
Yes.
And we can explore that right now because we're all here to, I mean, I think he's talking about barriers to connecting with the dreams in an appropriate way as deemed by James Hillman, which is not to analyze. So the reason that we want to analyze things is because of these barriers that make it seem like analyzing is the best way to go.
It's the ways that we can stray from the Hillman mindset of dreams are like the underworld or underworld like and can be mythologized about but not analyzed or should not be picked apart.
He doesn't want us to. Well, we'll get into oppositionalism in a minute because that's in the middle. First, there's a material barrier. Then there's oppositionalism. And then there's Christianism that we're not really going to get into very much, I think, because the basics of that is just that he feels like some of the tenets of Christianity create barriers to connecting with the dream world in an appropriate way. We're going to just maybe leave it at that. See if we have time later. Do we want to talk in order, like materialism first as a barrier?
Sure.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. Okay.
So.
Yes,
Cam.
I have a lot to say about materialism.
Perfect.
Go for it.
Mainly because, like, I think the way he presents materialism in this book is that he really, like, sort of imposes a certain psychology on a materialist perspective. He frames it as like, you're obsessed with this myth about Mother Earth and presenting things to another so much so that you recontextualize things and your materialist perspective is just like a psychological framework that you need to get rid of in order to see dreams in the way that I see them. But I think that, you know, for me at least, materialism isn't a psychological perspective. It's like ontological fact. Material is out there and it's what informs our perspectives about how true they are to the world. And the perspectives can be wide and varied, but it's material that informs us. You know, it informs us by telling us like things like falling down often is bad, or, you kind of want to have your eyes open when you're crossing the street. Because of material things that are going on in the world. And I don't see how that's tied up with the psychological baggage that he imports.
I agree 100%. I think as you were saying, I think the material world, reality informs our dreams to a certain degree.
It's weird. His whole thing about how it's the pure mind realm. It's just very strange way of viewing dreams as though we don't get image. It is something summoned up from within. Is that how he presents it? The images of dreams are a reflection of nothing outside of us. It's a reflection of us.
But it's also a reflection of all of these myths too, is it not? Am I confusing him with Jung, or is that part of it too? That he keeps drawing on. I think part of it is Okay, well, I can just read some stuff that he wrote. Maybe we can go of that.
Sure.
So materialism in psychology cannot be countered with individual subjectivism or the private ownership of the self, which is psychological capitalism. So first, can someone explain to me what that means? Because I'm not 100% sure what that means.
Can you read it back one more time?
Yes, yeah. Materialism in psychology cannot be countered with individual subjectivism or the private ownership of the self, which is psychological capitalism.
I guess it's like, maybe this psychological capitalism would be a way to being like, I own my own identity. It is separate from the material circumstances surrounding this identity. Like,
Yeah, he's saying it's just another materialism. But that, I mean, he sometimes is hard. We were talking.
He's about, really tough.
He's tough to understand.
So how is that another materialism in his view? That's a.
Okay, wait. Materialism in psychology can be met, however, with a wholly different way of making life matter, making it count and have sense. Those all have air quotes. I mean here the quality of depth that replaces the physical significance. I mean that nothing matters more than death. And when we start our psychological reflection from there, materialism loses its maternal ground because he hates everything that has to do with moms. Okay. Materialism begins with, okay. It's an archetype. Its starting point is the archetype ruling our perspective towards psychic events. And that's our view of death, the underworld, and dreams.
Here's a thought, though. You know, he's all about the death and this kind of perspective. I get it.
No moms,
but
all death.
But without life and material things, there is no death.
Yeah.
So I guess one of my barriers is the opposites. That we'll talk about later on, but I really struggle
with
some of his concepts.
Well, I think he's trying to do two things at once, where he's trying to draw a comparison between what he's saying and like death, I guess, and like the decay, and he wants all this imagery, he wants all the goth imagery around it. Yeah. And but at the same time it he tries to get a separation from life, which he projects as just all the other opposite stuff than this stuff. Mm-hmm. But then but by making that comparison to these things that are ultimately linked with the other thing, it's just like, I don't know. It's just trying to square a circle or something like that. Like it just doesn't make sense to me.
The peg isn't fitting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe life is a projection of death.
Yeah.
I mean, it could be anything with him. He really loves Telus.
Mm-hmm.
Telus is the.
Oh, he doesn't like Telus. Sorry, Telus is bad. Hades is good because Hades is a man.
Yes.
This is also something that I wanted to ask, which is, does he? I mean, it's not on purpose misogynistic, but he is like, psychology is all about moms. Why is it all about moms? Mm-hmm. And like Telus, there's no male. Counterpart for Telus in mythology. And so he's like, it can't be Telus that's involved in this. It has to be Hades.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Yeah. If you have any opinions about this, or I know Jade, sometimes you know about mythology and
I'm not familiar with Telus.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. But first time hearing of Telus.
Yeah. Telling us about Telus. Yeah. Anyways,
but it is interesting that you pick up on that, you know.
Yeah, maybe it's me getting.
No, but it's.
But he has said a few times.
It's in there.
Psychology is obsessed with the relationship, attachment to the mother, and it doesn't know, you know, which is fair. It's fair. Some of the stuff he's saying is fair. It's just not clear what he's saying sometimes.
Perhaps his own mother is his. Barrier.
This is actually interesting. Maybe I disagree with him so much because me and my mom get along great.
There you go. So
I had one more thing to say about depth and how he's we should pursue meaning through depth. Mm-hmm. And when somebody says something like that, I don't really relate to it too much, because when I think about like the things that I get meaning from out of my life, it's never internal stuff. It is always in and through my relationship with other people, my relationship with like where I am in the world, like nature. Wow, what a pretty view. I'm getting something out of this. I don't usually get something out of an internal work on myself. Mm-hmm. Like at the bare minimum, I would need like a medium of expression to go along with that. Like maybe art or something like that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, he does. No, I mean, there's a whole thing that he says that I'm trying to find it. But he basically does talk about like flattening, like not accepting the dream, like the underworld in its whole self. Yeah. Okay. We need the underworld, but we flatten it in the name of surface relating, which is also in air quotes, which is like, again, like we do have to relate to people. Like, I don't know, like, and I'm not sure what the underworld is anymore. Now, like, I thought I knew what it was, but I don't know anymore after reading this chapter. Does anyone know what it is anymore after reading the chapter? I think that's more in, I had more reactions to the oppositionalism too, I think because of our background, like with
our training. Yeah,
exactly. Like I think because we learn also about symbols, like being things that hold like opposites, like there's a polarity to a symbol and that's what makes it a symbol. I was like, okay, so what is going on?
And like finding the balance and accepting both and
So, are there more?
I think that wraps up materialism. I'm just like, I don't know. I'm like, I don't know. It's like, it's a very opposite way of how I view the world. Like, I'm very happy with the way I view the world. It is a very physical and real thing to me. I have faith in the things that are around me. I'm skeptical of the things that make you overly skeptical. Like, I think this is maybe trying to do.
Okay.
But yeah, I really think I guess there's one more point I wanted to talk about where he's like, oh, there's all these different views of nature and, what's it called? They're each only just one perspective on things and they're just equivalent to like my perspective and you got to abandon in these other perspectives to get to my, perspective. Mm-hmm. And I just want like materialism doesn't imply necessarily adopting one particular perspective on material. Like, it's not like, oh, we're all just atoms in the end. There's different ways of just understanding different like things. Like on one level, I'm atoms. On another, I'm like chemical elements. And another one, I'm, you know, a biological human being with a psychology, you know, inside a social structure in a world affected by geography and politics and all this stuff. Mm-hmm. So it's like, those are not exclusive perspectives from one another in like a materialist sense. Like there's materialist analysis and all those, and like they're not, I don't know,
it's a really good point.
The perspectives aren't very limited in like in a way that like they exclude each other.
Okay.
Anyways, that's my defense of materialism. Let's dive into the psychology, psychological side of things.
I mean, like, it's just it goes directly into the oppositionalism too. But like, yeah, he does have this thing about like, that there's something in the underworld that we can't possibly understand unless we just like rid our minds of any previous ways of understanding the world. Mm-hmm. We can't like, there's no like inroad into understanding your dreams unless you forget everything that you've ever learned before. So that's a bit what it feels like with oppositionalism as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, Jade. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Do you want to say some of the things about, you want me to I can say some stuff first.
Yeah,
you can. I'm going to go first. Okay, I'll go first. Okay, here's my oppositionalism page.
Oh.
Okay.
It's very full.
It's very full. So, okay. I'm just trying to read it. Oh, yeah. So he talks about polarities and how... Yeah, how we have this idea that he doesn't like polarities. He doesn't think polarities works. And so Jung, okay, well, we'll talk about that in a second. So like the opposite of day is night, maybe.
Night.
Yeah. And the opposite of the sun is the moon. If you work like in the normal frame of like opposites, but, you know, then he starts to make this argument. Well, like, but if the qualities of the day, or like, I'm making this argument now. Like, okay. So I was like, okay, James Hillman, I'm going to play your game. So if the qualities of day that you're going to tune into are actually going to be that you can't eat it and that it's bright, then maybe the opposite of day would be like a chocolate bar. Because then it's the opposite. Or like the sun is like really bright, really hot and really big. So maybe the opposite isn't the moon. It's an ice cube or something.
Right.
So that's okay. Fine. Like, so this is, and, but it's still, but in his mind, that's still not good enough.
No.
It's, it has to be, there can't be any relationship between the opposites is what I'm understanding. That for any something to be the opposite of something else, there has to be a relationship. And if there's a relationship, he doesn't want it anymore. There's no relationship allowed to anything. And so with Jung, the opposites work in compensation for each other. So let's say you have a dream that like you're hanging out with famous people in like a fancy building. So this is a good, it, his understanding of Jung is that like this is a compensation dream. You need to like literally, I think he says like Jung is always telling people like they need to like go be in the forest and like chop some wood and like eat cottage cheese. He literally says cottage cheese, which I thought was really like stood out to me. Anyways,
it's very specific.
Yeah, it's very specific. And that, but you have to understand the opposite. So yeah, so if you're dreaming of famous people and of like a fancy building, the opposite in for Jung is like something like this is materials, like not materialism, but like material stuff and like social status. And so you are craving like the opposite.
Right.
For Freud, it's wish fulfillment. So glad that they can get along. But yeah, so for Freud, it's like you want to be famous and you want to live in a fancy house. But either way, the opposites are like important, I think, is my understanding. Yeah, and then he just has this real focus on, he's like, why are they like satanizing Thanatos? Like, why is death equivalent with sin? Which like I understand is like, yeah, like we don't like, it's okay to like the cycle of life, but it's also pretty normal to like not like when things die too, or like the, you know, so
yeah. But maybe that's where this resistance comes in.
Our resistance?
No, his.
Oh, because, what's his?
Because he's like, oh, you know, this is like his beef with, you know, oh, why is death bad? Why is it seen this way? And I think he's challenging that.
His own resistance to death.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
But also the way he's framing it too.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So he's trying to get away from the normal framing of death.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Okay.
By breaking down the opposition to life.
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
So I have a question.
Yes.
Like, for me, okay, so that was one of the sticking points for me is like, I don't think I could accurately describe what death is without referencing life, or accurately describe what life is without referencing death.
Mm-hmm.
Like, life is life as a cycle, like we can have images of like the static image of life, the static image of death, which seem to imply like, oh, but they like imply across time that something was alive or something will die, or I don't know. It's just, which I guess is a barrier for me.
I think we're on the same page with that. It's hard to see one without the other.
Yeah. It's hard to see it as not, and to pretend that there is no polarity also is like,
yeah.
Yeah.
And to kind of have a concept of what it is without prior knowledge, you know, all these, as you said, like this flat kind of, yeah.
He brings up the flattening a lot. Like, I have two other just ideas here, and we might go to a commercial break in a minute. Mm-hmm. So when a depressed person goes into therapy to analyze the unconscious, he may rediscover, thanks to Freud, the underworld again, because depth psychology, despite professing scientific materialism and paying homage to the great mother, in air quotes again, it also performs the chief function of religion, which is to connect an individual through ritual to the realm of death. That's what therapy is to Hillman. Everybody's rolling.
Connect an individual to the realm of death.
Through ritual, though. Mm-hmm. Hey, what? But yeah, I mean.
Look, I love connecting to death and rituals to get me there.
Yeah.
But the way that he is trying to describe his ideas, and it's very confusing. Yeah. There's a lot of contradictions.
Yeah. Is connecting even like a problematic way of like relating things for him?
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah.
Like, I know that he wants dreams to be connected to in a specific way and shape and form, but therapy is about talking to other people a lot of the time. It's something you do in groups of at least two. I don't know.
We agree. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think we'll go to a commercial break in a second, or at least just for some music then. But okay, so here, I think it's something for us to think about. Like, mm-hmm. The thing that I got that was, like, he was offering something. He was like, okay, don't do this, don't do this, don't do this. And then he was like, okay. So the underworld perspective offers another psychological mode of distinction, where sharp sight means insight into the thing at hand, not comparison with something else, and where clarity means precision of internal relationship with images, not logical relations between them. So he's saying, like, you look for imagistic resemblances of what the dream is like. Mm-hmm. And when we make these moves for distinguishing a dream, we're moving like deeper into understanding what it feels like and sounds like. And then you don't need oppositions, you don't need pairs, and you don't need the compensation or any of that. So you're just like sitting with the image, and you're making lateral connections, which he could have just said. Like, I feel like he also could have just been like, just sit and draw a picture of the dream, mm-hmm. which I know from other stuff that he's written that he does think is good.
Yeah.
Like, he's like, just sit and draw a picture, and then like get deeper into the picture, you know? So we're going to think about that, and we're going to come back with more Hillman talk in a minute. You're listening to Dreamscapes on CJLO, and we're going to just get into something else in a second here.
We'll be right back.
Louis Dufford presents two exceptional events in Montreal. The virtuoso Gambian kora player Sonu Jabarte on March 8th at the National, and the iconic Malian singer Umo Sangare on April 21st at MTELUS. Take advantage of a special offer by visiting festivalnuitdafrique.com.
If you like served with a side of a little bit of and a heaping helping of then you're gonna love BVST, your best and worst of rock and roll, country, punk, and metal, every Wednesday from 7 to 9, right here on CJLO 1690 AM.
Hi, you are listening to Dreamscapes on CJLO. We're still here discussing James Hillman.
How's talking Underworld.
Talking yeah. Underworld. And you just heard Deathbound by Mastodon, which was introduced to me by my brother because the music video has puppets in it and he thought I would like it, except that the puppets kill each other. And I was not prepared for that. He sent it to me to cheer me up also, which was like a very him move, and very I appreciate sweet. That about him. Yeah. It is. It is very sweet. Anyways, how are we feeling about Hillman?
We want to...
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So right before the break, we talked about, what's it called? Diving into the image or like the actual like positive thing that Hillman says about our relationship to Dream. Mm-hmm. And there's something that's like kind of interesting about the idea of focusing in on specific images and rather than, I guess, catching them up in a framework, just trying to like maybe add detail to them like as well. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Adding detail to the images?
Or like, I don't know, sit with the image in a way that like you feel like you better know it.
Yeah, well, this is, Jade and I were like, maybe we'll talk about like maybe something that we had to do that was like maybe influenced by Hillman.
Mm-hmm. I think it was too.
The more that we've read this book, the more I'm like, did we accidentally get some Hillman infused like academia thrown at us? But so we were in a class where we had to do dream journaling as part of a therapy program. Art therapy. I guess it's important because it has to do with images. Mm-hmm. And we were told, so the dream journal, was everybody's dream journal in a found book or am I making that up?
It was recommended.
Okay.
But not everyone did.
Okay. So it was recommended that you found a book and you like destroyed the book as a way of keeping your dream journal.
I would...
Not destroy. Not sorry, destroy. I'm using the wrong word. How in air quotations. What word would you use?
I think just repurpose or reimagine.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know, reclaim.
I just found mine recently, so that's why I'm using destroy, because it's really... there's a lot of stuff going on in there. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you basically... Like, you could paint over stuff and, like, create an image on top of it. You could, like... black everything out, right? You could find words in the different pages too that like related to what you were talking about or what you had as symbols. And then you would just, I don't know, I'm going to say what mine was, but I don't know if I ever saw, or like maybe I saw yours. Maybe we got to see each other's, but it's been a really long time, eh?
It's been a long time.
So like I would just redraw the same image over and over again or like parts or like shapes of different symbols that would come up in dreams, like they would reoccur and I would redraw them as a way of trying to stay with the image, which was what we were asked to do. Like not to like look up what the image means, like what the symbol might mean, but for you to come up with your own understanding of what the symbol would mean.
As the main part. But then as an extension, like we went broader than the Hillman sense because we were kind of encouraged to research what, you know, the symbol means elsewhere or, you know, like as a collective.
Okay. So in one sense, you're making your own meaning, but then later on you would look at like...
Expand it.
Yeah.
Yeah, because, yes, because that ended up being really helpful sometimes. And it didn't have to be like looking up the symbol as a dream symbol in a different culture or something. It's just like you started to like, yeah, like I had a lot of animals, or I remember dreams with animals. So then I was looking up like different things about the different animals in my dream. And that was very illuminating sometimes into what things could be about.
Mm-hmm. But then here's the question.
Yeah.
Because that brings it into the material world, right? And also there often was times where it would bring up opposites to compare.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's very interesting that it was a found book, too, because that is explicitly giving you material to relate your...
Yeah, well, you're basing it off of something. It's not a blank page. You're, like, reacting to something. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I like that motion that you were doing.
Sorry, we're just hearing some sounds. yeah, that was my thing coming off of the page motion. Yeah, I don't remember what I'm saying. What were we saying?
But that's the critique that I have for Hillman. Like, in this book specifically, as like what we've read so far, is that he's saying this, like, sit with it, sit with the symbol, but then, okay, so I have to erase all my prior knowledge, like, not extend further.
Yeah.
Which I've never tried.
Yeah.
It
sounds like meditative almost.
Right.
Just like if you dream something, like don't analyze, just meditate on it would be, I guess, a way that I guess would be kind of a way to not.
No, it's just because you look so pained.
I'm stringing words together. I'm
we're struggling.
I'm desperately, so every single neuron in my brain is firing trying to understand this book.
Yeah. It's a struggle.
It's really difficult. And I do agree that, like, it could be, I feel like one version of this book could just be like, instead of trying to figure out what something means by Googling it, like make lots of pictures of it. Mm-hmm. He has actually... We had snake talk before. There is one example, and I don't think it's in this book, but there is an example that he has of this black snake in a dream. Mm-hmm. And he's like, don't think about, like, what, you know, whatever, what you think, like, a snake might mean or anything. Like, stay with the image of the thing. And I think his, like, the shortest version of this book is, like, draw a bunch of pictures, like, make a dance about it. Like, I don't know, like, do something embodied to try to understand what the dream is about. Don't, like... try to analyze it. And also because the thing that he says about the polarity is that it becomes a medical procedure when it's a polarity, because you're always trying to, like, the solution for Jung is to do the opposite thing as a way of, like, curing the imbalance.
Yeah, like, I love this idea of sitting with things. Like, I think we all do that to some degree.
Yeah.
It's just... his resistance to other kind of modes of exploration is where the problem comes
in. And I feel too, like, just that book thing was really helpful for me, like, to be using a repurposed book, because if I had just had a blank, if it was like, oh, just, like, take a blank, like, notebook and, like, start making, I would be like, I don't know about this. But it was really interesting too. I remember, I think I touched on this briefly, but I'll bring it back into this one. Like, when I was having this dream about a killer whale, and then that became part of, like, my dream journal, and there was like a shape that was reoccurring with the fin, because then I also had bats, and there was, like, the shape of the bat wing that was, like, kind of similar to the other like the shape of the fin, right? Like, there's kind of this concave convex thing. And then there was when I did, like, the lateral research, so the dream about the killer whale, the orca that I had like, coincided with me, like, finding this pin that I thought I had found that belonged to my grandmother. Mm-hmm. And then when I was doing research, like, orcas are an animal where the grandmothers, like, become the boss of the pod. They're matrilineal, and it's, like, the grandmothers that are the boss. And I was like, what? Like, that was very, like, relevant. So it really helped me feel validated in, like, how, what the dream could, like, was about or whatever, like, the serendipity around it. What, do you want to talk a bit about your dream journal? I don't want to put you on the spot.
Oh, no, I was just going to share that my found book was Frankenstein.
Oh, nice.
Good choice.
Yeah, it was beautifully, like, illustrated as well, so, it holds different significances for me, so.
Yeah. Do you want to talk about any of your symbols?
I mean, what's that? Oh, yeah.
I don't want to give away your symbols, but if you want to talk about their symbols, you can.
Nina was just doing a fantastic salamander.
Oh, yeah. And I said, sorry, because, yeah.
Yeah, so one of my symbols was a salamander that came to me in a dream. So, and I just kind of sat with it and kind of followed it, and it showed up again and again in different ways.
Hmm.
So, yeah.
That's interesting. Salamander. That's an interesting. Yeah.
Like a phoenix, you got that because the salamanders can go into the fire, right? Yeah. Or that's the myth, anyways. Like, yes. That they can go in. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I like that.
Also, amphibian.
Yeah.
But in reality, it was only because when they put logs on the fire, newts often, you know, salamanders are often in, like, kind of damp wood. So they would see them in the fire.
Oh.
But then,
They would be fine, I suppose.
Kind of. Let's just think that.
Well, maybe they were running away. I hope they were running away.
I hope so.
Yeah.
So
that Hillman guy.
Yeah.
Cam, thoughts?
Well, I guess it's interesting. Okay, so this is not Hillman. This is mostly me. If he's just recommending, like, hey, before you rush off and, like, try to, like, take these dream images and place them into, like, huge contexts of meaning and find the exact, like, definition from outside, maybe do a little bit of, like, self-reflection and, you know, think about these images and, you know, take them on their own terms. And, you know, sit with them, think about what they mean to you before you necessarily, like, throw them out to other people for interpretation or reference other people for interpretation. That's good. I kind of agree. That's, like, a good thing to do with your dreams, probably. That being said, if he's trying to say that, I'm very angry about the way he wrote this book.
It could be a way more straightforward.
But
it's like every sentence you have to decipher.
I also like, so one of the things I am also struggling with for this entire book is the mythology aspect of the book.
Agreed.
Because it is a framework and it just comes back again and again and again. And I don't like, at base, I don't know if it's necessary to what he's saying. It's like, it's a very particular relational comparison structure that seems to be, like, antithetical to, like, his view that, like, oh, we, like, dreams are their own thing.
Yeah.
And he wants to do it with this particular set of images around, like, his, I guess, premise. But that set of images, like, it seems like at every single turn they're hindering him in his ability to, like, say stuff normally.
Yes.
Or to say stuff normally, but also, like, like, get at his points. Like,
Because he's also assuming that there is an assumption that we all understand. Like, Tellus, it's the first time a lot of us are hearing about Tellus, right? Like, he's assuming or he's deciding that everyone's going to know the same significance for, like, all of these characters. And we don't all know that.
And he doesn't take time to break it down, really.
Yeah.
He's just...
I think one of his things, though, is he would do, like, psychological... what's it called? When you do a case study. You would do like a case study, but like of mythological characters. I might mm-hmm. be wrong. I probably have to look this up. But I think he would like treat them like they were in therapy or whatever. Okay. And like look at kind of, so I think that's kind of one of his things is like mm-hmm. looking at them like that. So mm-hmm. maybe people go to him to, because they know that's what they're going to get. They're going to get like a story about these people from mythology. But I agree that it really, like, it makes it hard for me to understand what he's talking about. Mm-hmm.
It's also that would be super interesting too, because I would say that that's like a kind of anti-mythology, because mythology doesn't contain those psychological elements often. Like mm-hmm. when we think about like, you know, myth, I don't think of it like as, oh, I'm going to get a psychological portrait of Zeus or Hades or anything like that. It's the books as they are written are like, oh, he's most of the time, Zeus and Hades, he's a guy who does these particular things mm-hmm. and no mention of vibe whatsoever. And then he's the guy that does these things. Oh, look at all these things he's done. Mm-hmm. Like the psychologizing is from like a very modern perspective, and that's something being taken back into the myth.
Mm-hmm. Could say that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I guess, yeah. There's not a ton of psychology in myth, I don't think.
I mean, I'm sure he would argue against that, but I agree that they're yeah. not real people. But that the stories are written in a way to like, there's a morality around it, or like there's a way of like doing in-group out-group stuff, like mm-hmm. in a social group or whatever, yeah. right? Like you. So.
And I think for him, a lot of the figures in myths are the archetypes that are like the okay. embodiment of this and the embodiment of that.
Okay. So. No, that makes a lot more sense.
Yeah. So Persephone is like going to mm-hmm. be one of these people that like goes into the underworld and like, I don't know. How come he hasn't talked about Persephone yet? Because she's going into the underworld and coming out of it. Isn't that her whole thing?
Yeah. And she's epic.
Yeah.
And he hasn't even talked about her once yet. So isn't she the answer to this question? If we're going to,
is it because she's a woman?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. For sure. Hillman, I'm disappointed. We're going to go to an ad break.
We're so critical.
It's okay. I'm sure that he wanted people to... We're sitting with the book.
We are.
We're discussing it. It's fine. We're not even just analyzing it. We're also just sitting with it.
Yeah.
And also criticizing.
So many barriers.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Present Shada Hayes. Discover the country folk of singer-songwriter Shada Hayes with Kindergarten Heart, an album as fun as it is profound. Available now on CD and colored vinyl. Shada Hayes will perform at Le Ministère on April 4th for the Kindergarten Heart record release show, sharing the stage with her band and surprise guests. Tickets are on sale now. For more information and for all tour dates, go to boldsound.com.
Hello, student. You or your classmates' tuition may be dramatically rising due to the Quebec government's racism-fueled language concerns. Are you frustrated about this? You should be. Your best friend cannot afford the tuition hike. They might have to move back to Manitoba.
Oh, no.
That would really suck for them. There's nothing to do there. Don't make your bestie go back to Manitoba. Join the students resisting the tuition hikes. Follow us on Instagram at Tuition Strikes and get your red squares outside of the CSU office in the Hall building. Together, we can resist the tuition hikes and demand free education for all.
We're going back on air to ask this question. Jace on the spot now. Is it?
Do we have a... Y'all should come up with a stinger for news... moon news.
Oh yeah, like a song that we play before we put it on.
Yeah, like bum 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 bum.
Yeah,
I don't. That might be copyrighted, so I don't want to say any more about that. But like, just a stinger of something that just being like, it's moon time.
Yeah. Moon report. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, we can definitely brainstorm that, or just
I think we should.
Yeah. Moon report. Yeah.
Moon.
Yeah. That will work well. We could do Sailor Moon. We won't
do Sailor Moon. Oh, we can do Sailor
Moon. We don't have the copyright for that. Mm. I think. That could be something else that we could talk about. Sorry.
I'll think. This is my job. I'll get back to you.
Okay. Do we have access to Sailor? I would like that, actually. I like that song. Mm-hmm. What was your question, Jade, before we... Yeah.
Well, I was just curious if you had thoughts about this, since it's going to be a new moon.
Yeah.
Is there connections between new moons and the underworld?
Why? Because the moon is dark? Because there's no light? I'm sure Hillman thinks that. Well, that's why people are scared of eclipses. Mm-hmm. We were talking about eclipses before we were on air, too. There's an eclipse coming. It's on April 8th. You can see it in North America. Get totality.
You shouldn't look at it.
You shouldn't look directly at it.
Don't use your eyes.
You can experience it. Please don't look at it. We never said to look at it.
No.
Oh boy.
Not with your
eyes. So that's why people were scared of eclipses, though, because it was this weird thing that in the middle of either a full moon or just the day, it would get darker. Like, the light gets really weird. We had eclipses during funding drive. By the way, Cam, did you know that the CGLO funding drive started and ended with an eclipse? Was that on purpose?
No. That was because we had to do it in October, and we wanted to put it off as long as possible.
Directly coinciding with two eclipses. It was just very funny. So we have other eclipses coming up later, and people were scared of them because the light changed and went out and stuff. And they were like, they probably thought gods were doing something, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm sure some people feel stressed out about new moons, in that way. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, I was just...
In the underworld way?
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess we have to look it up. Okay, so now we have a semi, not live, but very recently recorded moon report.
Yeah.
Hi, everyone. This is DJ Nat reporting from Ecuador. Tonight's moon illumination is of 26%, and it's a waning crescent moon. I hope you enjoyed tonight's show, and stay tuned for more.
I love the birds.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's all go to Ecuador. we hope DJ Nat is having a nice time there. Mm-hmm. So the moon was at 26%. Yeah. So this is a great way for people to, if you want to, figure out how many percents the moon goes down or up per day, because by Sunday it'll be a new moon, so there won't be any light at all. So we'll go from 26 on Tuesday to 0 on Sunday,
right?
So
it loses about 5% a day.
There you go, math.
Math and
math and other things.
I literally counted it on my fingers. It wasn't really math, it was more of a yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, we respect math. I would love for a mathematician to read this.
Oh, that would be a great idea.
Okay. I know a mathematician. I'm going to ask. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yes. Okay. We're going to ask them to read it, and maybe they will have other things to say about this. It's going to be after we're already finished talking about it, but maybe they'll come back to it.
We have 5 minutes.
Yeah.
I'm just thinking, do we want to talk about The Undertaker?
Yes.
Oh, yes.
And we can also do the dreams thumbs up, thumbs down afterwards if we want to. We can do it after The Undertaker. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, The Undertaker.
Yeah.
The coolest wrestler?
Right.
Question mark? Yes. Exclamation point.
I don't know anything about him, so I think you guys have to.
We have to send you.
Yeah. Yeah.
But tell me now. Yeah.
Okay.
So The Undertaker. What's his vibe? He's goth. He's the goth wrestler.
Okay.
He's also the mysterious wrestler.
Okay.
But not Rey Mysterio.
Okay.
That's a different wrestler.
Okay.
Also really cool.
His vibe is just the best. He'll just come in out of nowhere. You know?
they famously do a bunch of whenever. So his entrance, he has one of two entrances to the stadium generally. So occasionally when it's like he's expected to be out there, a bunch of fog machine smoke fills the stadium. You hear the bell toll, and he like walks out into this like into this cloud of smoke, and it's like you're summoning some sort of like demon. Sometimes there's torches involved,
yeah.
Some chanting,
okay.
Very like pseudo satanic sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Other times, so the lights will cut, and then he'll just appear places. He'll also disappear from places, like he's disappeared from a coffin before.
Yeah,
yeah. So he was in the coffin.
Mm-hmm.
Now where is he? We don't know where he is. Yeah. Okay. That does sound cool.
Yeah.
Feels like that gone wrong could easily go into like Joe Bluth, but it doesn't sound like him.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah. Like, yeah. No. Yeah. He's like, he's like a cool music.
Nobody's laughing at him.
Well,
no.
Yeah.
He does wear like black leather pants and a black leather duster and a black cotton tank top is his like look.
Okay.
Does he also wear? He has also has like a hat sometimes, mm-hmm. where he's like a cowboy black hat. So
okay, yeah.
Eyeliner too.
He has a look.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and he always has like eyeliner as well, like heavy black eyeliner,
like underneath. Yeah. You're showing. Yeah.
Just like
okay, I guess I just have to see it to understand.
And long hair.
Yeah.
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 I automatically assume that. That's yeah. cool. Okay, and so like, then he fights people though.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. That's perfect. It's wrestling.
It's wrestling. Okay. How does he fight people? Like, what's his style?
His finisher is the tombstone.
Okay.
Where he basically picks somebody up, turns them upside down, and like drops them straight onto their head.
Oh my god. Okay.
Yeah.
I think that like famously, like only one person has ever like. Kicked out of a tombstone after it's happened to them. Like he's mm-hmm. he's 100% wins after he pulls off one of those.
Okay.
Right. Which, okay. So here's the question.
Yeah.
Is he an archetype for death?
I mean, it sounds.
Or the underworld.
To me, it sounds like he's definitely going down that route.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's definitely Hillman coded a little bit.
Hillman may like him for all we know. Just not directly in this book.
Yeah.
This was published in 1979. I don't think he existed in 1979.
Mm-hmm. Undertaker heyday was like, what, early 90s?
Yeah.
Oh, mid 90s, maybe. I remember being obsessed with him as a kid. So
yeah. He was my favorite.
I just somehow missed out on wrestling. And I don't feel like I would have hated it, actually. Like, I know it's violent, but I know it's also very fake.
Yeah.
Yeah, so... Yeah.
If you ever want to start to get into wrestling, I really recommend watching the Royal Rumble. It happens once a year. It's basically 30 wrestlers enter an arena one by one, and they all wrestle together. It's a good way to get to like sample all the personalities that they got going on, and like pick out your favorites. I don't know. It's how I discovered my love for Rhea Ripley, who was a championship one. What came in second for the Royal Rumble that I watched.